Welcome to the TTPOA Podcast, a podcast for SWAT officers, military, and all first responders. We'll be talking training, tactics, and leadership with the best subject matter experts around. Here are your hosts, Derek and Brandon.
All right, welcome to the TTPOA Podcast, Episode 7. Man, we are trucking right along.
Man, 7 episodes have gone so fast.
I know. It's like we've been here for 2 days straight doing this.
I think we've done 4 this morning.
So. Yep, and we're going to do 2 more this afternoon. So, I mean, we're killing it. Man, our next guest I'm excited to have, we've got Dutch Moyer. How's it going?
Thank you very much for having me. One. Number two, I'm lucky number 7.
You are lucky number 7.
Number 3, that's a really cool intro. Did you have to pay big money for that, right?
Dude, like, 75 bucks. Yes. $75 for the intro. I think it's not bad, right?
No, it's good, man.
It's not bad.
I mean, ladies and gentlemen.
I mean, so I actually had to kind of write that out and then send it off to the people, and they kind of did their own thing, and they sent me like 2 or 3 versions back. And honestly, I heard this one, I was like, that's not bad.
75 bones. That's not bad.
It's not bad. So if you want to do a podcast, $75, send your shit off and they'll send you an intro.
Yeah, so I'm already in, and we'll go over this as we go, but I'm already doing a whole bunch of podcasts. So yeah, I want to get that information from you and figure out who that dude, is.
You can do it.
Yeah, here's the sad part. You're asking me for help. That's so sad. So I had to YouTube how to do a podcast to figure out how to do all this shit.
Well, look at you. I mean, you have a board now.
I look professional as fuck.
It's the equivalent of asking someone, hey, can you teach them how to color? That's what it's like.
AF, you professional AF.
That's it, man. That's it. Well, Dutch, for the guys that don't know you, man, we'll let you introduce yourself.
All right, Chris Moyer is my name. Dutch is a nickname that's been with me for a long, long time, and now it's part of my company name. It's Dutch Chris Moyer Consulting. So my life, it's convoluted. I'm a very young 58 right now, but I was in the Army for 31 years. After I got out of the Army, I did some work with an agency from the government, and then I was in the armor business. And now here I am doing my own thing. This is my second full year of a calendar. Like, we just sat down with a couple of other young men that work with me, and I said, you know, we're going to make a calendar and we're going to do this open enrollment
professionally.
Here's a website, here's all this other crap, there's a domain name, you know, there's social media to go along with that, and all this other crap. And it's funny, right? And we were just talking about it offline, right? And now I'm the chief bottle washer, magazine loader, I'm the guy, and I hate it, most of it. I like to be on the range and training, and I don't want to do anything else. But yeah, so 31 years in the Army, 26 in Special Operations Command. I was in, my first taste of JSOC was I was a Ranger in 1992 to 1999, and then I graduated up to a higher level and became a JSOC operator, and I was there for 14 years, and best time in my entire life. Plenty of combat tours, probably 10 or 12, and it's funny when I say or 12 because I'm not sure, because I did 2 as a liaison element, 1 in Afghanistan as a liaison officer. I was a non-commissioned officer. I retired as a sergeant major out of the United States Army. But I was just talking to some men about this. Where I was in my past was the greatest time of my entire life.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time with fantastic people, and I was very comfortable in uncomfortable places with these men. Every time somebody asks me about it, you know, hey, your career, I miss all of it.
Yeah.
And it was the greatest time of my entire life, whether it was in combat. You know, we saw horrible things. You know, people died. Obviously, you see that. It's a job. I told one person just recently, a really good friend of mine, that I'd seen, you see life and death even in one day. And it's, you know, what do you mean by that? Well, you know, I remember doing a target where we killed, I don't know, 5, 6, 8 guys, whatever it was. We also had a birth. One of the houses had a woman who went through, and our medic
helped deliver the baby.
Our medic was delivering the baby.
I could see how that would cause some lady to go into labor. I mean,
so how crazy is that, right? You know, you see that life comes into play, and then you're also eliminating life. So very bizarre.
So so as a young Chris growing up, what drove you to go into the military? Why did you choose that path?
Awesome question. And some people know what they're going to do all their entire life. And I knew I wanted to be a soldier my entire life.
Okay.
I So before I was an infantryman, I was an armor crewman. So I wanted to be a tanker all my life. I did models of tanks. You know, I did dioramas of little tanks. So I studied vehicles and airplanes from World War II. I always wanted to be a pilot. Yeah, never worked out. But I always studied those, you know, books. You know, you get these color plates of a Ju-87 Stuka dive bomber or a Panther tank or a Sherman or whatever, you know. And yeah. I just really poured into these books, and I became an amateur historian of World War II, and then that branched off into Vietnam and everything else.
So this is as your young
kid. Oh, yeah, young, kid. super young, yeah.
Okay. Well, and, like, was your dad or grandfather in the military? Or?
No, grandfather, no. Father, no. My father tried to be in the Army. He got booted for a heart murmur.
So you're just the kid that's just into tanks and history of World War II and some of the equipment, the planes.
Always,
and,
yeah.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, so kids would make fun of me because I played Army outside all the time. Climb trees outside.
Oh, yeah.
I had a little plastic, I had a green plastic 1911, which was my favorite gun to use as a kid playing in the woods.
Uh-huh.
Turned out to be, that was one of the first guns I was ever issued, was a 1911 pistol. And the M3A1 grease gun. It was my first two weapons ever issued when I was a tanker. And that all came back because when I graduated up to JSOC later on, the first pistol class we had was 1911. And then here I am. Wow. I'm back. Hell yeah. I'm back. I knew something about this.
My little green gun. Yeah.
Yeah, man. So, yeah. But always wanted to be a soldier. Always, whether it was playing in the sandbox, playing in the woods, always wanted to be a soldier. So
became a tanker, right? Is what you said?
Yeah. When I was 18, I actually joined the Army when I was 17. Delayed entry program. I graduated high school in when you graduate high school,
like
June.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was 2 weeks later, I was basic training, Fort Knox, Kentucky.
Oh damn.
And I actually thought I made a mistake. I was,
this sucks.
I'm sure you did.
I'm getting my ass beat right there. This is not what I thought it was going to be. You know,
mother buddies are drinking beer and
yeah, you know, most 17 year olds aren't ready for, that wake up call.
And those guys that the funny stories out of my basic training were almost all the drill instructors were Vietnam veterans.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the patches, the whole thing. Second ACR, so 25th Infantry dudes. Division, first Big Red One, Maracal.
I'm trying. So to these dudes had lived it, man. They were there.
Yeah. I fell asleep like day one. I was exhausted.
Sure that well.
It was hot. You know, I felt, yeah, no, it didn't. Yeah. And so Staff Sergeant Forrestel, who's 101st Airborne in Vietnam, pulls me out of my chair, right, and throws me outside. And says,
very gently.
And said, First Sergeant Peterson was the First Sergeant at the time, and he goes, First Sergeant Peterson fought alongside God in Vietnam, son. What are you falling asleep for? You know, I'm like, how many push-ups can you do? I don't know, Drill Sergeant. We're going to find out. So that's like day one. I'm like, this is not working out for me. But it turned out to be a fantastic crucible for me personally. I actually called my parents and said, I want to get out of here. And my dad's like, you know, you signed it in, bro.
You're property of the government.
Stick with it.
It's tough.
And then right after that, I became the platoon guide and I sang the songs and I loved it, all of it. I could never get enough of it. So I always wanted to be a soldier.
So like you became a tanker, why'd you choose to go the special forces route, or why'd you choose to kind of go bigger?
So here I am, you know, living a dream. I wanted to be a tank commander. I was one. Yay for me. I got out of the Army in 1986. It was so unprofessional. It was riddled with drug users and alcohol abusers. As much as I loved them, my last platoon sergeant, it was named Hargis. So if you're out there, bro, sorry, I'm not diming you out, but he would walk up into my room was like the first room on the right. Like when you came up the stairs, my platoon, my room was in, and he would bring up a bottle of moonshine and put it in my refrigerator. Mm. Because he would drink from it pretty much all day. Oh,
wow. Damn.
But it was in my refrigerator. Thanks, bro. Yeah, we had there was all kinds of trouble there. The Army was different than the 80s. You know, yeah. It was just completely different. And so I left. I said, this is dumb.
Yeah.
And as soon as I left, I missed it and I wanted to come back, but I wanted to come back as an infantryman.
How long were you gone for?
Almost 5 years.
So what'd you do in the meantime?
I stayed affiliated with National Guardsmen and stuff like that. I was reservist, National Guardsman. Actually went up to Camp Dawson to be in the 19th Special Forces Group. And I went through the pre-Special Forces courses and stuff like that. We went out to Fort Ord for all that. In the meantime, I was a UPS supervisor and laborer. I was a bartender.
So you threw boxes for UPS?
Yeah, man. Yeah.
And serve drinks.
And serve drinks at night.
Yeah,
I like that.
Yeah. And then I was preparing myself to go again. So I started, like, I'd road march all the way to the bar, and that would be some of my PT, you know, and I'd road march to my girlfriend's house, and I'd put, you know, 40 pounds on my back and go do it. And so I did other things too. So in between my times, I decided, well, I'm going to be a special forces guy is what I thought. And so I said, well, I'm going to take a parachute course. So I went to Cleveland. I went to the Cleveland Parachute Center, and I did that. And I wanted to do scuba. So I bought a whole bunch of kit, and I got scuba qualified with the Scuba Schools International, again, up in Lake Erie. So I did all that up there because I went up there for a job. And then I tried to get back in the Army. And that story, dude, we could spend a whole hour on the convolution that I tried to join the Army again. And they were like, hey, we have good news for you. There's a spot that's open, but it's, you have to be a cook.
A cook?
Or a chaplain's assistant. And I'm like, no, I don't want either one of those. I don't want either one. And so I had to wait, and I did some other things in between, and then I finally got in again. So
out of the whole Army, there's only two positions.
That's what they were saying.
That's fucking insane.
A cook or a chaplain's assistant.
Yeah, yeah. You can. The good news is you can get join the Army again. The bad news is
you're a cook.
I'm like, no, I don't want that. I don't want that. Yeah. So I want to be an infantryman, and that's it, and that's all there was to it. So I finally got in as an infantryman. I was a staff sergeant, right? E6, and as soon as I got back in, I was an E4. I lost everything. You know, you've been out too long. You lost all this rank.
Was it hard to come back at like that?
Hard? No, it wasn't hard.
Like mentally, like
it was just stupid for me. And now I'm doing this all over again, right? And I was committed. I'm like, well, I'm going to do this whole thing.
Yeah.
And I know I'm going to go through basic training and AIT, the whole deal. But somehow, some guy saw my previous records or whatever and said, hey, you're already a soldier. You don't have to do all this. But we don't have your basic rifle marksmanship records, so you have to do. You have to do that. And that only that part's in basic training. So you have to go back to basic training just for a small amount of time. And so I'm this 27 years old. The kids called me the specialist because I was a specialist, right? I was an E4 specialist, but they called the specialist because I would help out. I would do everything, you know, for them. I'd
AKA, say, hey, like they're calling you the old man.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm like, hey, this is how you march, fellas. You know, this is how you take apart a weapon. This is how you put the weapon back together. And one drill sergeant saw me and said, you know, well, you're already a soldier. Let's have you help out. And then the other drill sergeant had nothing to do with that. So he treated me like a maggot. So it was very interesting. You know, I would roll my hat like my hat's rolled right now, and that was a no-no. So drill sergeants would come by, snatch the hat off my head, and stomp on it and give it back to me, and I would just roll it right back and go again. And you know, that this it was, and I did all the advanced PT stuff. I was really into it. And at nighttime when they would make us go to bed, I would go into the latrine because it was right next to my room, and I would work out in the latrine. That's a true story. I would do flutter kicks and push-ups in there while everybody else is trying to get some sleep. And then
you're in the shitter
next day
doing
I'm in the shower doing flutter kicks and push-ups.
I love it. And you're 26 years old. You're,
26,
you're out 27. Doing these
18, all the kids are in bed trying to sleep.
Yeah. And I'm like, well, I need more PT, right? So I know I'm gonna go on this different
path,
you know, course, you know. Yeah. So I have to do this.
I'm glad you didn't go down the cook or trapling course.
Me too.
I'm glad you didn't do
Me
that.
Me too. Thanks. I would have been the best cook ever.
Well, Casey Ryback was a cook from was like the movie Under Siege where the cook is a Navy SEAL.
Oh, that's right. He's a Navy SEAL.
Yeah. Cook. Steven Seagal. Yeah, dude.
Casey
Ryback's a cook. Look how badass he was.
That's
look
at true. You two pulling that out of your gray matter.
Dude, you like that, don't you?
Yeah, I do because I live my life in movie quotes and song. Yeah. You know, I communicate with songs and movie quotes.
Movie quotes all day long, man.
I think there was like three Under Siege. I know there was at least two. So I mean,
yeah, there was two. Was it three? Yeah.
And there's the Playboy girl was in that. Who was her name?
Oh, yeah.
She came out of the cake.
Came out of the cake.
Yeah. She ended up marrying him, didn't she?
Later on. I have no idea.
I do remember.
I think that sounds, that sounds somewhat right.
So you're worrying me right now. That part of pop culture is not, I'm not in there. So you are.
Shit, who was? I'm going to Google that.
Have you guys seen the recent Steven Seagal movies?
No.
Dude, what trash.
Oh, they're
fucking horrible.
And then he did this stint, right, as a law enforcement officer, right?
Yeah, in Louisiana, which was horrible?
Horrible.
Horrible. Horrible. Yeah, all staged. So how he got hooked up with that was he was down there doing filming a movie, and the sheriff's department was doing security for the movie set or whatever it was. And I guess the sheriff at the time was a huge Steven Seagal fan because it was in the, early 90s when he was a like a big name movie star or whatever it was. So the sheriff made him like a reserve deputy or whatever it is. And now he just He's like living in Russia now.
He lost. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. He lost his mind somewhere in there.
Yeah, you don't say.
Yeah, you don't say.
All right, so
yeah, enough about him. It's about me.
Yeah, enough about the cook, the Casey Radback cook. All right, so doing push-ups, floor kicks in the fucking shower.
Did it. Yeah.
Right. And then how was going through?
So that all switched, and I went to after I finished some of that basic stuff that I had to. I went to an AIT element. Advanced individual training, and there was a group of men that were also reclassifying their military occupational specialty. Wow, MOS, and they were they were switching over, and so there was a whole bunch of us, and we got our own floor, and I made friends with a guy named Horseman. I think his name was Horseman. He had a car, so when training was over, we'd leave, and you know, we did again. He was in the SF pipeline, so he was an 18 X-ray. Pipeline guy, that he had to get a new MOS, so he had to go to infantry. He was a commo guy or something. So that we just went through that, finished that, got my blue cord and became an infantryman, and then went straight to airborne. And I was on a roll because I was the airborne non-commissioned officer honor grad. That was really weird. So I did that, and then I went to Ranger indoctrination program. I got a Ranger contract. And now it's called RASP, Ranger Assessment Selection Program. Used to be called RIP. Went to RIP, and I was the honor grad in my RIP class. So now I'm like,
you're just trucking right along.
Right, yeah, I'm crushing this, man. I got the 175 as a Ranger, and immediately got smoked out of my mind because that's what they do there. You know, welcome to the company.
Was the upside down koala?
All that shit, man.
Yeah.
The qualifying.
Yeah, qualifying.
Qualifying, yeah. And then there was the starburst. How many? And then when you're on your back doing something, you got to count how many tiles are in the roof because they're going to want to know that, whatever, all kinds of stuff, right? But and it's funny because we were.
And you volunteered for this.
Oh, yeah, man. So I'm getting smoked there, right? And I told you before, right, that I was an amateur historian. I love World War II history, and I love the Ranger history stuff. So every time they're smoking us, they're asking us Ranger history questions. And I this was my Forrest Gump moment because. I keep answering the questions correctly. And the one dude pulls me in a room and he goes, why are you answering all the questions correctly? And so my Forrest Gump moment.
Because you're asking me to, sir?
Because somebody taught me? Yeah, because you told me to, Sergeant, right?
Because you told me to, Sergeant.
That's exactly what I thought. I'm like, well, Forrest Gump wasn't out then, but you know, that was my moment. I'm like, because I studied? I don't know. Because I love this shit? They're like, why are you so old? They're like, so now everybody wanted.
Why are you so
right? Because these kids are 19. They're 18 and 19, right?
Yeah.
I'm 27. And they're like, now they want to know more about me. Why are you, you're an anomaly. Not only was I out PTing the young kids, which is fun, but you're 25, 26, 27. So now you're reaching muscle maturity. Right. I mean, you're better than you were when you were 18.
And you're actually a man.
Yeah.
Like maturity level. Exactly. I mean, just all over.
And so who's an older guy that can out PT these young kids and what's the deal and knows the Ranger history questions? And that kind of kicked it off and I became a machine gun team leader and then I rose through the ranks pretty well, pretty quickly. It was a lot of fun. Ranger school was fun, interesting to me because I ended up getting promoted to sergeant before I went to Ranger school, which is a no-no. That doesn't happen in Ranger Battalion. That doesn't happen. You can't become a leader without the leadership school.
Leadership school.
Without going through Ranger school. You just can't be. But they wanted to keep me. And because I was senior, that just happened, right? So I got promoted and no one wanted to shake my hand. And it was a thing that people turn your back or not.
I mean, oh, wow.
That's a bummer. Yeah. That's a bummer. So, but I went through Ranger school and I passed finally. And there was a moment there too. I'm in mountain phase and it's cold, right? I was a winter ranger. And so when back in the day when they had patches on your collar, right? So my patch as a sergeant is a larger block. And then so in ranger school, you take all your rank off. Everybody's the same. but the faded portion of your collar now reveals that I have a larger block. So I'm getting a ranger instructor's looking at me and he goes, you a combo guy? I said, no, Sharp. He said, you're a medic. I'm like, no, Sharp. He's like, oh, you're the one. And I'm like, oh my gosh, somebody knows about me. I'm screwed. I'm like, this, somebody up here knows about what happened in 175. Like, it was an anomaly, right? It was, this doesn't happen. And so, but I swam through it. And
they give you a hard time for that?
No, no. But there, I think there's more expected of you for sure. And I think, you know, Ranger school is interesting because people talk about the Ranger, Ranger instructor roulette. So sometimes you don't know who you get, you know, and it's just some guys are badge protectors. Even ranger instructors, right? There could be a badge protector up there. So, you know, if this, if they don't like this guy or there's something going on, that's obviously easy to to do. You know, you could do that and not pass this guy for whatever patrols or whatever, you know. But that didn't happen. I got through it. So all worked out in the
end. What was after, like, what was next after Ranger?
So I stayed in the Ranger Battalion until 99 and then graduated at JSOC as an operator. And that was... That's the rest of my career.
The rest is history, huh?
And that was just a lot of fun. You know, it was pre-9/11, and then all of a sudden, 9/11, and then we're going to war, and all the deployments to war. And
so did you see a big shift in just training and operational, like, whoa, man, what we thought is not reality?
It's a great question, because my intermediate class, the one I'm giving here on Saturday and Sunday, is called Evolutionary Gunfighter. I think there's, you know, first and foremost, a lot of instructors will tell you, there's, and they should, a lot of guys that I know, there's a why behind it, right? There should be a why behind this. Why are you doing this? Right. You could watch some YouTube hero or some IG super fag, and they're doing something that looks interesting or cool, or why are you doing this, you know? And there's no why behind it.
Right.
No, cease fire on that guy. Find a new guy. So, so Evolutionary Gunfighter, because there is an evolution without a doubt. You know, when I was when I first got to being a Ranger shooter on the ground, you know, you do up drills. You've probably done some of these.
Just standing up drills, simple up drills.
Rifle comes up, you see the sight, whatever. You shoot two shots and you quit.
Yeah,
that was the thing. Bam, bam, quit. Bam, bam, quit. There wasn't a third sight picture. There wasn't a follow on. There wasn't any of that. And why two shots? And how come not four shots? And there was never. I don't ever remember any kind of evolution from, it was just up drills.
Right.
Double taps, you know, they would say. Controlled pairs later on as we got smarter. But, and then that translates, right? And then, your first time I'm doing really hard training, still we're probably taking two shots to the body, maybe a shot to the head, maybe a failure drill, something like that.
Yeah.
But that changes after you see what your projectiles do to bodies. Now everything's different. Now we're as you're closing to your point of domination in CQB. Now you're maybe shooting four, five, six times.
So was the firearms training is what you see as the biggest change from
training
from peacetime to wartime?
TCCC armor kit development, right, is huge. It's way better than it was ever.
Yeah.
Because there's a why behind it, right? Why do I have this? Why do I have, you know, why am I the drop leg? So one of my first holsters ever. Issued to me was a drop leg, like two straps.
Yeah.
Super down low.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah. I had that.
Super cool, bro.
Yep. They suck. That's the dumbest fucking thing ever.
Yep.
But how'd you learn this? Well, you learn it because it's, well, not only does it constrict your blood flow, it acts as a mini tourniquet. I mean, really, it does. But it moves. It moves everywhere. Yep. And it's way down there. Yep. And in addition to all that, so what happens if your helicopter crashes? What happens if you fall in the water? What happens if all kinds... I want to get rid of my kit, right? But I can't even get rid of that. It's still here.
It's there.
So
it's
now we're going to change... Now we changed where our kit was going to go and how we're going to do it. And just every time you went somewhere, you just... Okay. This is obviously not good. Let's change it to that, you know. Yeah. But the thing when it moves on you was so funny because you'd run from the truck or the helicopter or whatever to the target and your holster is completely changed. Mm-hmm. You're like, what the like hell is
front
this?
Of your leg.
Yeah. What the hell?
Yep.
And still all the cool guy pictures that you see back in the day, man, those things are down low, bro.
The Dick Kramer.
Like right above the knee.
Yep. The Kramer photos.
Yeah. Yep.
Whatever ATF or whatever SWAT guys. Or,
yep.
Absolutely. Hey, you know, it's funny. Brandon does a lot of, he hosts a lot of basic SWAT schools, basic SWAT, you know, some of these guys first experience and, I'll help them out or whatever it is. And man, we'll show up and there'll be guys with those holsters down there. And if I'm doing the range, I'm like, first off, you got to look like you know what the fuck you're doing.
Yeah.
You don't. let's go ahead and let's suck this stuff up, or let's maybe just get like a little drop off that main belt. Don't have to have all that, you know. Yeah, I'm not a big fan of those.
It's funny. I just look at the, like, because I got on SWAT in 03, and that was,
damn,
I was like, old. As soon as I got, I was like, fuck yeah, I get to put it on my thigh. This is awesome, man.
Right?
Yeah.
Everybody wanted the drop leg holster because it made you look different.
That's the way it was.
Everyone else.
And it was. And I'm like, shit, where's my gun at? Because I'm used to my Sam Brown on my duty belt. And I'm like, oh shit, it's down here in my fucking mid-thigh area and stuff.
So, well, that's the thing, too, the training thing, too. So, again, train like you fight. Ironclad. I spoke to the ladies at Ironclad yesterday. And, we had Oakley gloves. We had Ironclads. We tried Mechanics Wear. We tried all kinds of stuff. I don't wear gloves ever.
I don't either.
I don't wear gloves. She's like,
well, hate gloves.
She's like, what if you had a, you know, what if it had access to your phone? And I said, that's cool and all, but I don't care because I don't wear gloves. Because what I said, I asked her, I said, do you wear gloves when you're driving to the ATM?
Yeah.
Do you wear gloves when you're out with your friends and family at the Walmart or Target battlefield parking lot? No, you don't. Yeah. So I'm not going to wear gloves. And the tactile feel, especially if you're a breacher or whatever, I mean, you don't have the same tactile feel as your hand. And if you're not going to train with gloves all the time and wear them all the time, then don't wear them.
Yeah, I fucking hate them.
I do too.
And I can't do them.
It's, you know what, I've, knock on wood, I've never gotten a cut or anything on my hand from not wearing gloves. I've probably shouldn't say this. I've deployed bangs with no gloves. You know, that's like one of like the rules you shouldn't be doing. But, you know, from the company, I get it, liability, but I do it all the time.
No, it's well, that was, you know, what you just said too. Like, so who makes that decision? A lot of agencies and a lot of military agencies and law enforcement agencies, and correct me if I'm wrong, but those things come down from risk averse commanders who make you wear the things you're wearing.
Yeah.
You
know, yeah. So, I mean,
you do it.
Like if we're doing port and covers on windows, the tool guy, we actually make them wear gloves and Kevlar sleeves because we've seen glass do some nasty shit to people, especially if you overpenetrate with that tool or whatever it is. Yeah, you've never done that. So we'll make sure that guys are wearing, just for safety concerns there.
Phrasing.
Yeah. But like on the flashbang stuff, like that's from the companies that, you know, that produce like DefTech and CTS and those guys. Like, it's just one of those deals, you know, because that little thin layer of glove material in their hands, you're going to, you know, keep that flashbang from taking your finger off.
Well, now hopefully, right? You have the bottom top vent.
Yep.
So even now, if you could, you'd probably hold that thing and probably be okay.
Okay-ish.
I wouldn't want to.
I wouldn't want to either.
No, but you know, you're not going to blow your hands off anymore.
Yeah. But no.
But it all goes back into, again, what people are seeing kind of on like Instagram. You called it, you know, or earlier talking about that offline, what people are seeing on Instagram, what's cool. Isn't really functional, isn't really real life, isn't really realistic.
I'm glad you brought that up because I have a thing about, there's a training organization out there. I'm sure they do fine work and they're good men, I'm sure. Decent men, right? Or men trying to be good men. The footwork talk makes me absolutely bonkers. Mm-hmm. So if you're telling me you're going to, so if you do a hotel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How many rooms is that? It's your shit ton.
This fucking hotel.
Oh, right. But if you're assaulting, the hallway down there and you got to go all the way down here.
Yeah.
So that's, how many rooms are on one wing, right? 50, whatever they want more. Right. So you're telling me a hospital, office building, hotel.
Large venue,
barracks rooms, add more to the list I can't think of right now, whatever. You're telling me you're going to get to that door, every door you're going to get to, and you're going to, wait, hold on a second, fellas, and you're going to move your hips and change your footwork? No, you're not. No. You're telling, if you preach this footwork talk to me, that means, that tells me that you've never done a real live ballyhoo, you know, shenanigans. You've never done real life shenanigans in a giant structure. No, because you're not doing that, man. You're not. You're being athletic. You're not falling down. You're not hitting the door. You're not hitting each other.
But you're getting to a point A to point B as quickly, as safely as you can using cover, concealment, angles. Yeah, it doesn't matter about your footwork.
You're not unlocking your hips.
Just get there.
Stop. I'm going to unlock my hips and change. No, you're not. You're not doing that. You're just not doing that. So I have issues with that.
So I'm assuming you have issues with some of the things that you're seeing online.
Yeah.
And the thing is if you said right now we're it's a large, large hotel. So we have to go now from here to the vendor show. I want to get up. I'm not going to think about one time stepping, moving. I'm just going to fucking walk.
You're just going to do it.
I'm just going to
do it. Yeah.
And that's the thing is that I think there's so much emphasis on. Now I understand there's some basics of, hey, don't just fucking do stupid shit as you're walking in the door. But if you're doing stupid shit as you're walking in the door, you might be just not an athletic person in general. And so there's too much emphasis on here's this little block. If you step here, and then here's this little block, you step here, and then you do this little block, it's going to be perfect every time.
That's what I'm seeing online.
Because we were talking about earlier with the last guys, and I've had this operational experience. I know Chris has. I don't know Derek. He didn't chime in, but I'm sure there's been something of when the door goes boom, there's fucking motor oil. There's some type of slippery surface that someone intentionally put in there, or there's fucking toys or shit in the way.
I would tell you where that is a no-go. We did a hostage rescue from an apartment where outside we're across a little hallway, set the charge off, and what happened to every bit of dust and dirt in the hallway, right? So the breach point, we see it, boom, the door blows, and we go to flow in, and now you're going in through a cloud of dust because you can't even see that far in front of you. Yeah. So you're not going to work on your unlocking your hips and working your, you're just going to go. You're going to get through that cloud of dust as fast as you can, hoping you're not taking rounds until you can actually see what the fuck you
Yes.
Do. Yeah.
And I think too, that goes back to going on the range and seeing what your limitations are with your body and how athletic or non-athletic you are and understanding your own limitations.
No, that's a great point.
Because everybody has their own limitations, whether injury, height, you know, all that weight, all that kind of stuff plays into what you are. So you have to adapt to be able to do the task that you're asked to perform.
No, that's a great point, because when you do like a large structure doing hostage rescue, I tell my students often, someone's going to be faster than you, yep, and someone's going to be slower than you. So you're going to have spatial and situational awareness enough to be able to go, okay, well, I need to slow down just a little bit.
Modulation.
Now I need to go faster a little bit. Yep. Yeah, there's times where gas on and gas off constantly throughout the fight. Gas on, gas off, gas on, gas off.
So let's just take this hallway here. Let's just say there's 50 rooms down this hallway. I go out this door, take a left. There's 50 rooms, right? You mean to tell me that we're going to take 50 different individual times of doing the same thing? It's not going to happen. Because after like two or three doors of doing that, you're either going to be tired, fatigued, stressed out, or there's going to be other things happening that you're not going to be able to do that specific way, right?
No, they're always different. You know, and I love CQB too when the students say, well, what if? I'm like, you can what if all of it. Mm-hmm. And you can paralyze yourself if you want to, but you know, we just maintain certain principles, and if you adhere to these principles for the most part.
See, I like that. So like we teach a lot of principle versus like this equals this, this equals this. We give you a principle of points, the way that we do it,
yeah,
and how you get to those points and the things, because it's in training, it's always like a sterile room.
Yes.
Operationally, yes. You come in, there's like a fucking crackhead laying on the door, or there's a couch, or there's a piece of furniture, or
the
whatever.
The aforementioned toys, a motor oil, whatever barricade they put in there. You know, the deep sessions of the room, who's in the cupboard, who's behind the couch.
All that's the what if. That could change every scenario that we're talking about. But as long as us three work under a principle,
right,
then no matter what happens when that door gets hit, I do this, you're going to do that. And we just kind of,
correct.
Yeah.
And then I tell people all the time, it's a complicated, fast-moving, thinking man's game.
Yes.
You have to be custom. I love the snapshot talk. So I want to do a step center clear or a snap 12, or I want to do a snapshot. When do I do your snapshot? Your snapshot never ends. It's a movie. It's not a still. So I just talked about this last night on the grass downstairs at the barn there. You know, people say snapshot. Snapshot indicates to me that it's a picture. A picture is a still. It's not. Snapshot is an ever-evolving movie.
Are you talking door get hit, step center, and entering, or what are you talking about there with that snapshot?
So I don't believe there should ever be a step center, by the way.
Okay.
I don't know what, I don't know who created that. I think Special Forces created it, and I think it's dumb. So you're always moving, you're constantly moving. But I hear in training, some guys will say, okay, you didn't take a good enough snapshot. Well, I'm not sure what that even means. But if I'm telling students a snapshot, that indicates to me that it's a photograph. You take a photograph, you gain all the information from the photograph, toss it. It's not a photograph, though. My point is, it's a movie. You are constantly watching. Your snapshot is never stopping from A to Z. It never finishes. It's a complex, always on the run thinking man's game. So if it's a thinking man's game, your information of what you saw, and I love, I'm going to segue into threshold assessment. You're constantly finding.
Yeah.
Right. As you're the number one man. Okay, fine. Sure. You're going this way, whatever that way is. So once you are watching your everything, right? You cleared your corner. Now you're moving to your point of domination. You're collapsing your sector of fire. Your snapshot is evolving, right? You're constantly on a movie. It's a movie. Because now your actions are next. Your next actions are determined by what's in the room. The room is terrain. It's what's next. And how can my fire help you? How can my, one of the mantras of my company, it's, we trademarked it actually, my sword is your shield. And this is Greek hoplites and it's the Roman phalanx and blah, blah, blah. But it's we don't do this by ourselves, number one, because right. Singleton CQB sucks. But number two is I'm constantly holding up my end right. of the bargain, that right. my sword is your shield. Yep. My rifle is your armor, right? Yep. That's yeah. it, period. Yeah. So there's ever evolving snapshot. It's not one thing. It's ever evolving. And, the threshold assessment, somebody asked me in at the sawmill, a couple months ago, you know, when do you start your threshold assessment? If I'm walking down the hallway and I'm cross covering or whatever I'm doing, I'm constantly evaluating the threshold. I have to see, I'm looking at it, right? I don't have my head down on the ground, right. but you've seen that before with SWAT students, right?
Yep.
What are you doing? You get your head up, guns
they're,
up.
Well, they're watching the guy. They're. Yeah, yeah, it's a bad thing.
Right. And I'm like, I'm always looking at it. I'm looking for the hinges. I'm looking for, is it open? Is it not open?
Right.
You know, are we doing opposing doors now? Are we doing it together? You know, all this, you know, it's there's constantly
so much,
evolving.
There's so much processing in the computer brain of us that it's a lot that
that's
you're
it.
Looking at.
That's it. Constant evaluation.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to hear your soapbox on the step center. I kind of want to hear what you had to think about that.
A year ago or so, maybe it was longer than that, I did like an 8-minute IG rant, if you want to call it a rant.
Rant.
on why step center is not the right answer. The way step center is being taught at times, you are you or are you not? You can tell me if I'm wrong. Are you by yourself? Step center clear. As you start rotating your body through the portal, are you by yourself? What's the idea anyway? What first and foremost, one of the principles of close quarter battle is how many guns are going to be in a room, right? Now it's a question.
Right.
How many guns, what does the technique work best with?
Four.
To me, it's four.
Four right? guns is better than two.
How many guns you want in a room?
As many as I can get in
all
there.
All of yeah. them. Yeah, yeah, I want all of them. So that's yeah. number one. So, okay, how do I accomplish this? How do I get simultaneous guns in the room? I have to get through the portal quickly. Step center or snap 12 slows the process down. The portal is the portal. The portal's horrible. It's so, and this is going to dovetail into another segue about deliberate and hostage rescue.
So the guys that say fight from the outside if you can, what's your opinion? I mean, that's kind of the reason behind step in center, correct?
Okay, so we're in a team of four. We already discussed that. So we have how many rifles? Doesn't matter. We have a lot. Or pistols. Now, if I step center, and what if I get a one-on-one gunfight? Mm-hmm. What now? What now? So if he, the perp, right, or the enemy sees me first or shoots first, which is entirely possible, now everything's changed. Now we have an operator in the portal. His life is ebbing away, and now we have to pull him out. Now we've lost everything that we want. We want surprise, speed, violence of action. We don't have any of that now. Now, what was the mission? Yeah, we're going backwards in time here, but what was the mission? Is it hostage rescue? Maybe it was. And if it is, now he has an opportunity to kill the hostage. Number one. Now we have mission failure. Number two, is it get the bad guy who's got the widget that destroys the kids in the school? Now he can. No, the principles to me don't ever change, no matter if it's deliberate or hostage rescue. You go through the portal as fast as possible with all the power within you. Now, how many guns? Again, how many guns? Is it four? Is it two? Whatever. I want to get in there simultaneously. I want to make him think harder, right? I have two men or four men in that room at the same time or virtually the same time. He can't think that fast. Mm-hmm. I'm going to soapbox again. I'm going to segue. So
do it.
No, I'm going to segue into the OODA loop. So I would ask people out there, who is John Boyd? Mm-hmm. And they don't know.
Fighter pilot.
Right. Fighter pilot that changed a lot of how we conduct combat right now. Have you ever read Robert Corum's book, Boyd? If you haven't, I recommend it to you. And you guys listening, I'm telling you, if you want a book about a man who changed warfare, it's Boyd. It's by Robert Corum. It's called Boyd. He was a terrible guy, not a great person.
Oh, really?
Horrible family man.
Okay.
But he was 42nd Boyd, right? He would tell those fighter pilot students, you get on my tail and I'll beat you. Mm-hmm. And he never lost. Never. Now, the OODA loop itself has been bastardized. If you read the chapters in Corum's book that Boyd wrote himself about the chaos theory and all this other stuff, that's where the OODA loop comes from. Observe, orient,
decide
and act. And then this loop continues. But it's not that simple. It's even better. So to me, complex close quarter battle is exactly what he talks about in Boyd. It because you are inside, you make sure you are inside the enemy's thought process. He can't react as fast as you act. This is the entire thing. This is what is dynamic points of domination, close quarter battle is all about. You can't think as fast as I can. I'm inside your thought process and I'm destroying you before you can even act. That's exactly what the OODA loop is. But again, OODA loop is so simple. It's not that simple. You got to look at it. I'm telling you, it's a fantastic way to, as soon as I'm reading, I'm going, this is exactly what I did for 14 years. This is exactly it. And this is what I teach now. This year, I'm not doing CQB here. I'm doing CQB in Indiana this year. I'm doing it in Arkansas. I'm doing it in Indiana twice, actually. I'm doing it in Arkansas. And I just did it in North Carolina.
What does a CQB class look like from Dutch?
In my perfect world, if a CQB program, to me, would be like 5 days, you know? And day one is flat range shooting and getting, make sure we know where our hold offs are. We're, you know, punching holes in paper. We're doing turns. We're, you know, shooting on the move, laterally forward, blah, blah, blah. And then we get into the basics. And, you know, and then it's crawl, it's walk, it's run. You know, let's do a PowerPoint presentation on exactly what point of domination CQB looks like. Right. And then let's go into the house and do it.
Because that is one of those things you ask guys, what, and I hate that because CQB tactics, it's so subjective. And there's so many fucking rabbit holes. There's so many like words and terms. And I think that's when you have to start, if you're going to have a true conversation with somebody. When you say this, what do you mean by that? Because what you mean might be something different because I've seen the POD stuff and I'm watching around like, that's not your POD. You're stopping halfway down the wall. Like your POD is right over there. Oh, well, no, this is what we were taught. This is POD. I'm like, okay, that's your definition, but that's really not what it was intended.
That's interesting.
It got bastardized.
Yeah.
A copy of a copy of a copy and stuff. And I think there's so many things and I've had conversation with Prank. I've had conversation with some other guys. And I think that's where I have had to learn to go, okay, hey, explain to me what you're talking about. So that way what you're saying matches what I'm saying or vice versa. Like, oh, okay, let's have a discussion on definitions of what we're doing because it is so subjective because now the shooting part is very metric based. Hey, here's the drill. Here's your time. Here's my time. Here's his time. This is what it says. You can't really argue that. The whole CQB stuff can get bastardized because, well, we learned it this way from this guy who learned it from this guy who learned it from this guy. And I think that's where it gets really tough to have a metrics of it because you've got some teams that run a quote certain way and their operational experience, their operational levels, that really works for them because they are just, they don't have the time and training and effort and they don't have the guys who can supplement them. So the whole tactic deal is so fucking interesting to me because you can have 40 dudes with all kinds of operational experience that have different philosophies on that. Would you agree with that? It's just it's so because I look at teams across the nation because I see so many and no one has the same exact thing sometimes or I've talked to guys like when you say this, what do y'all do? Do this. Well, that's not what I thought that definition meant and stuff. It's just interesting. So carry on.
No, you're good. So to your point, you asked that, do I agree? I think there are different philosophies out there on it. Yeah. I really think they are. There certainly are. You can easily see that via YouTube or any kind of social. You can see that, you know, this guy's doing this, these guys are doing that. And then you have some instructors, by the way, that are good instructors that don't teach points of domination. They'll teach strong wall only.
Yep.
And they'll say, I've heard this out of people's mouths. They won't get it. I won't teach them because they won't get it.
Yep.
That's BS, bro. That's an indictment on the trainer.
Yeah.
To me, that's an indictment on the trainer.
I agree.
This is not rocket science. You know, when I first went to Terre Haute, I'm doing CQB there this year again. But when I went I first went to Terre Haute in, I got out in 13, so 14 or so. And they weren't allowed to shoot and move.
I'm sorry?
They weren't allowed to shoot on the move.
The SWAT guys?
They had to enter wherever they were. They'd stop, then shoot, and then continue. So we fixed that, right? So, all right, stop that. And then we talk about cross coverage.
Yeah.
One of the first words out of one of the students' mouth is, what if I shoot my buddy?
Yeah.
What do you think I said?
Don't shoot your buddy.
Don't
shoot your buddy.
Let's talk about the process.
That's a horrible idea.
How many agencies do you know that line up on the door and then rotate their selector levers of fire?
None now.
There shouldn't be.
There used to be, right?
But no, I will say there still are. And I see it and I'm like, hey, bro, like,
well, dude,
that is not a good thing to do.
I'm telling you, that happens.
No, it you're does. Right. You're right.
That's heinous to me. So
it is. Because
there's a process, and I'll show you the why. Well, but there's a process.
But to slow down one second, to go back to that whole point, because I have seen that and I've talked to guys and go, this is what y'all, we do that. And I'm like, listen, I know guys that they're at the top tier of training in the world, in the Army side, the Navy side. And I had personal relationship with them. None of those men as a man have told me that's what they do. And if they're not doing that, because there's no one in the fucking world that has more training than the guys in those units. And if they're saying that's a fucking stupid idea, what do you think your dumb hillbilly ass is that has one training month, two training months is going to be able to do?
Yeah.
And that fucking drives me crazy because, oh, well, that's
yes or no.
That fucking yes drives no. me. It is. And I'm like, dude, I'm telling you, that is just reevaluate that. Does that make fucking sense?
No.
Like, it doesn't.
No.
I'm like, if these guys are, and I'm not saying you have to buy on every single thing, but that is a fucking common principle of looking at shit, just going on a fucking range and
should be an industry standard.
Yes.
Now.
I want to get back to that because I love the whole idea when you said there's 40 guys and there's 40 different ways to skin this cat, right? Or whatever. That's just an example.
Right.
Okay. So don't the law enforcement officers in the United States have a central training agency called the National Tactical Officers Association? Don't we?
Correct.
Yes.
Why can't? Okay. So years ago, man. So I'm getting fired up. Years ago, I saw there's an academy in Arizona, and I think there's one in Virginia, and they call themselves the Authority. Hmm. When you look at their cadre, there's no way they're the Authority, but. What is it? Gunsight? Gunsight. It's Gunsight. So, hey, I'm hacking on you a little bit, Gunsight. Mm. So, and they, what makes them the Authority? So then I said to one of my, at the time I was working for a company called Deco, with they're awesome people. And I said, hey, listen, can't we establish some sort of primacy if this worked, like you said, these elements, whether Navy, whether English SAS, whether Army, whatever, these top tier elements do it this way. And oh, by the way, they're very, very successful, right? Can we not go to the NTOA and say, let's do it this way? Can we not do that? Can we not sell a product? Can we not go there and say, this is why we should do this? But that was like 2018. And the answer is pretty much no. We don't. Nobody does that. So
yeah. So unfortunately, you know, there's so many agencies out there. There are so many different instructors. There's so many different ways of people, you know, of people teaching and doing things. There's different skill sets. There's different abilities. Different budgets. I mean, all that stuff plays into it. It would be so hard to regulate something that everybody has to follow. Does that make sense?
Would it? Probably.
I think it's probably
Herculean.
Think about like large departments, you know, 2,000, 3,000 man agencies. Think about how hard it is to get guys to buy into something that you're teaching or something that we're teaching. And that's only 2,000 or 3,000 people. Imagine trying to get the whole nation to get.
And I think
on that, one centralized idea.
Okay.
But, I mean, I agree with you 100%. If teams are doing that, they're fucked.
Look at the Pulse nightclub.
Okay.
How many? The three or four agencies responded to Pulse nightclub. Yeah. All different.
Yeah.
How long did they wait? I'm not saying they waited and more people died because of it, but they all had different ideas on how to do it.
100%.
How about not one freaking thing? How about one way to do this?
Well, if you look at Pulse nightclub, what happened on that one was that was so far out of their norm. So you have a law enforcement template of how to solve problems, right? Then you have that terrorist template. And what they try to do was they try to put a law enforcement template on a terrorist problem. Didn't work. You see what I'm saying? So like if you have a guy that goes into a bank that can't pay his mortgage, you know, maybe having bad times with his wife, caught her cheating, whatever it is, goes in and robs a bank and he gets caught in the act. And now we have hostages in a bank. You might be able to put that law enforcement template over that problem, talk that guy out peacefully, whatever it is. You try to take that template and put on that terrorist attack, which that was, you're never going to win that.
All right. Can I let's stop. How do you stop talking about racism?
How do you stop talking about racism?
Yeah.
Don't talk about it.
Yeah. Morgan Freeman did that, right? He was on a 60 Minutes long ago. He said, you know, I don't want to have a month for black people.
Yeah.
He's like, stop talking about it. So I'm saying this because why can't we, I just did an article. Aaron Healy had me sit down for an article when I was in Vegas, and because there's an issue with what you're saying right there. I think it's telling. There's a military template and there's a law enforcement template. There's a terrorist template and no. How about we stop talking about it? And all the templates, the different templates will work at different things. And why call one a law enforcement one and one a terrorist one? If this works better, why not just use a different template? I think it's dangerous to say, and then, you know, when Aaron asked me a question, it's like, there's too much militarization of law enforcement. What does that mean? What does it mean? If you can take an idea that works in this theater and it works over and over and over again, whatever it might be, why can't it work in Detroit? Why can't it work in Orlando? Why can't it work in Round Rock? It can.
Mm-hmm.
But people freak out when...
Well, I mean, I think I was talking about more problem solving. So when you're trying to solve that terrorist problem,
I'm with you.
Like you can't use like your normal police day-to-day function to solve that terrorist problem.
Well, yeah, okay. I think you can. You just, it's in the bag, right? It's in the tool bag. You pull it out and this is our template now to deal with this.
I think we're learning as a group of guys. I think we're learning how to handle that problem now.
Yeah.
But I think it was so new. It just was so out of their element, out of their norm that, I mean, they got caught up in their OODA loop. I mean, they were behind from the word go.
And I think too, like
never inside the enemy's thinking thought process. Never.
Because they didn't realize what it was.
So maybe.
So, I mean, if you look at it, it was a terrorist attack, right? So back then it was like the active attacker. You hear shots fired, you got to go. Well, now he stopped shooting. He's barricaded in the bathroom, right? They're like, okay, well, he's not shooting, so we don't have to go. But now you got active attacking, active dying.
So I think that's all wrong. It's a wrong.
Absolutely, it's okay. All wrong.
So, but look, now juxtapose all this with Uvalde compared to the Nashville Christian school.
Failure to act.
So they
indecision.
No one did anything, right? Yep. And then in Nashville, you had three guys. It looked like in the body cam video, just three dudes hanging out there, doing exactly what I would do. Running to what? It's a permissive environment.
Yes. Absolutely.
I don't have to worry about what's down here. And sometimes I guess the fear is how many shooters are here and how about just dealing with one problem at a time? How do you eat an elephant?
one bite at a time.
You know, we got to get this guy right now. Guy, girl, thing. This is killing people. Right. Let's go. This is what we signed up for. So let's go.
No, you're exactly right. And I think... What you're talking about, I understand that, and I agree with a lot of what you're saying as far as having a standard. But I think for me, it's more of a standard of a mindset of like, this is our fucking mission statement. We fucking go after the bad people that are doing bad fucking things to people.
So the mindset, I was in my head, I'm going, maybe we should segue to a mindset thing.
Because the reality is if team A does PODs and team B does Strongwall, but they all had the fucking mindset of that motherfucker's not killing any more innocent people.
Right. Time to go.
That right there is going to win.
You brought up Uvalde. You look at that. That's a mindset problem with some other problems. I don't know anything about it from what I've seen or read.
I'll go back to, let's kind of define the mindset, because I know the men and women that I have worked with or have on this podcast. That mindset, or whatever word you want to use, it's fucking just born in you. Like you were talking about, I just knew I was wanting to be a soldier. I just wanted to do this, this, and this. No one fucking came into you and said, hey, Chris, this is how I'm going to mold you into this. No one came into me. Like when you were saying this, I related to that because I grew up playing fucking G.I. Joes, Cops and Robbers.
Yeah, man.
I had fucking an arsenal of plastic guns.
Watching Vic Morrow on combat. You know, watching every movie I could, right?
And so for me, when I got into police work, it was like, I just wanted to go fucking do the cool shit. No one had to go into Brandon and go, hey, Brandon, let me rechange your mindset to go do stupid shit that might fucking hurt you or kill you. It just was bred into us. And I think that's where, when I say mindset, that's kind of what I look at. And I know the men and women, and that's what I talk about, is like, I don't care at the end of the day what tactic you do, because things get fucked up. That 20% is that thinking man's game. Go fucking do that and be fucking aggressive and had those skills to put that motherfucker down, because a gunfight is a gunfight. And if you had those skills to kill that guy or to kill that person to stop the active shooting, that at the end of the day is going to save it every single time.
And bingo, bingo, bingo. So big time mindset. But I just recently saw online somewhere said mindset's not a thing. It is a thing. If you read Grossman's book on killing, only a certain amount of people can do these things and then go to bed at night. Right? That's fact, period. But you can. I think with leadership, and I just gave a leadership speech in Wisconsin, I think you can develop the mindset. You can have people buy into this. So you can have somebody who's not that warrior-like, and you can break with a strong tribe.
How?
Strong tribe. Be, know, and do. Right? The Army Leadership Manual. So I'm on podcast number 11 of the Warrior Ethos Leadership Program that me and another partner of mine are doing. And it's awesome. Number one, it's awesome. We're also linking it to men with disposable income to sign up for an evergreen project that we will constantly be talking to you and training your families and blah, blah, blah. Because as we know, things going down the drain right now, right? I mean, we're in a society where we're asking to believe that Dylan Mulvaney is a woman. This is insane, man. If people can change the language and change, if we're to believe that a man is a woman and a woman is a man, we're on the edge of going down the drain.
Yeah.
So anyways, that's enough segue for that. But how do you do it? Be, know, and do, right? Be exactly who you say you are. Know your tactics, techniques, procedures, equipment, and your people. This guy who shot these people at the bank recently.
Louisville.
On drugs, got fired. Did his leaders even know him? Could we not say this? Someone, he wrote a note saying to somebody, I'm thinking about shooting some people at the bank. Hello?
Yeah.
Do we not know this, right? We can find this out by knowing more of your people. And then you do everything you ask your men to do. You do it all. You do it all and you do more of it.
Yeah.
Good leader, it ain't easy. Being a good leader is not easy. And I tell people that all the time. That's hard.
I think what I've seen too in law enforcement and training and things, and you take guys that have had more experience, more training, and then you put other guys then that had that mindset of, hey, I'm doing this job as a police officer because I truly got in for the right reasons. But they don't have the necessary training, or they don't have all the other stuff that, quote, we'll just say SWAT guys do. But you integrate them into, say, some active shooter involvement, and you take three or four SWAT guys and you integrate them with these guys that are willing to do that. And all you got to do is just tell them and lead them by your actions. And,
yes.
And you see those guys like, well, fuck yeah, man.
So mindset's contagious.
Yeah. Yes, it, it, of course it is. It is. Yes, I completely believe it. Yes. If you have a strong tribe of principled men and women, yes, and women, mostly about men, though, this is obviously a man's world. This job is man-centric. I mean, listen to Jordan Peterson, right? You know, more men are in prison than women. You know, more men take combat jobs and SWAT officers than women. It's just a fact, all right? So don't get bent out of shape when I say men. Right. Not you guys.
Yeah, Brandon will get bent out of shape.
Derek gets excited when he hears men. So, you know, just leave it at that.
Maybe. Ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Oh, yeah,
center brother. Stage. But no, I'm telling you, it is contagious. It can be, without a doubt. Here's our principles. Here's our task. Here's our conditions. Here's our standards. Here's our principles. Let's do it. And also, oh, by the way, right? Remember I said a long time ago, I loved being uncomfortable with men in combat, that I was able to be comfortable because of it, right? Because of the training, because of the tribe, because of the mentality. And you know, I would submit to you that 99.9% of those men do have a warrior mindset, of course. And that what was Erin Healy also asked me, she said, do you think there's a police mindset and a warrior mindset? I'm like, or there's no room for a warrior mindset and a police officer. I'm like, no, no. These are linked together. Right.
That was the whole thing with Grossman.
Father.
That was the whole thing with Grossman. It's like you had that sheepdog mentality, and then you had what was the other thing that they wanted versus that warrior sheepdog they wanted?
Chihuahua. I don't know.
That was like more like a passive. You know, that was a whole militarization of law enforcement and just all that stuff that was happening when that book came out.
I think that this whole militarization of law enforcement is a made up.
It's made up by
a bureaucrat.
Well, if it's a narrative, it's a narrative of what they're trying to preach. And to me, it's not mindset. It's more gear. Like they see like
the armored vehicle or something. Yeah. I'm scared. Everybody's in multicam. You know, look like special operators. Yeah. They don't look like law enforcement officers. Yeah. Okay, well, just stop wearing multicam then.
Yeah.
But do the same thing.
It's the thing is whether you're in the military, whether you're in law enforcement, you got into it. The men and women who truly got into it, no matter what word you want to coin and say, whether it's the military mindset, it's the warrior mindset, whatever that word is, you ultimately got into it to stop bad people from doing bad things.
You are the thin blue line, brother. You're the thin blue line.
Yeah. Whatever that is, I want that person not to fucking rob this person, steal their shit, sell them drugs, be a menace in their community. That's what I want to do. Whether it's law enforcement or it's the military, going, I don't want anybody to fucking change my country from the outside. I want to go and give freedom to other people. It's the same thing. It's for the greater good. It's fucking giving yourself up for something greater and better than you.
That's an awesome part of leadership right there. What was I? You said sacrifice. What's wrong with me right now? Servant, like a servant leadership.
Yeah, servant leadership.
This is what a father does. Yes. You know what I mean? So, and when we say there's a sheepdog and wolf and all this mindset. But it should be a fatherly mindset. I'm a protector. So Byron Rogers, he's got something going on with that protector thing. Protector symposium, protector this, protector that. Hey, that's good. But you should be. Yeah. Right. And that's whole the warrior ethos leadership thing I'm doing. And I really want to focus on young men. So many young men don't have that anymore, or they're being told some other lie from social media and the bureaucrats that, you know, it's okay to be a woman or something or whatever that you may see now. Young men need fathers, and they need protectors. They need people that can go forward and say, hey, this is what you need to do.
Right.
This is exactly how you need to be.
Like I love the term, the whole mama bear deal of, I know my wife is a very gentle, kind person. I mean, you know, we've talked about it. People love my fucking wife more than like me because she's nice, but don't fuck with her kids because she will fucking go ape shit crazy on you. And she will use violence if she needs to. And I'm like, that's fucking attractive. That's sexy. That's awesome. Because
that's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah,
no shit.
But you should be that. Well, you should be like, don't fucking hurt me or my kids or my family because I am protective of that.
I told these guys in Wisconsin, you need to find a fierce partner.
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. Yeah. I mean, that is super, super cool to me. And that's, you need to find that fierce partner. It's a good idea.
And that's a great thing. Like, it's a great thing for a man to be able to, hey, I don't have to prove every time I walk in the room, throw my dick down and go, hey, here's who I am. But
why do you do it then?
Because I want to just, you know. But anyway.
How is this devolving into dick talk?
It always does. But the whole point of this is.
Because we're fucking cops and military dudes. It's all we talk about.
Don't push me to that limit, because I want to be nice. I want to be kind. I want to be respectful of everybody. But at the end of the day, no man should push another man in that way unless you're willing to deal with those consequences. It's kind of the whole thing was, at the end of the day, when we do shit as police, we're reacting to your vote that you voted. You either voted or you didn't. So we're either going to do this because you choose this, you choose that. And same thing with men. Like, hey, man, because of your bullshit, we're having to act like this. If you're just respectful of other people, it works itself out.
100%.
You know, it just does.
So we talked about a lot of stuff, right? And it comes to training and kind of leadership. In the law enforcement world where you're now kind of training, what have you seen as being one of the biggest failures or something that you were like, man, why are these guys doing that?
That's hard, man. That's a hard question.
We'll break it down to like shooting. Cause like you said, the whole tactic thing, y'all do that. That's really subjective.
Yeah.
So what about like something we have metrics on? We have like, you fucking look at the police shooting ratio sucks.
Well, here, the biggest, the failure doesn't lie in the agency itself. The failure lies in the ombudsman and the councilman and the mayor and the governor, because they don't allow law enforcement officers to train as much as they need to. The failure is not doing hard training. The failure is not training under duress. I love to watch the officers involved shooting thing on the IG.
Yeah.
And the one guy's shooting and he runs out of ammunition and he's trying to put his magazine in backwards.
Backwards, yeah.
I've seen that. Was that the guy shooting out the car?
One of them was out of the car.
Yeah. And there's been several of them.
And then who's the guy in Vegas who's driving down the road? God bless you, bro. Just shooting out of his windshield.
I think that was the same guy.
Stop, dude.
I think that was the same guy.
Well, in the end, he's nervous, right? Because he shot that dude to death.
Yeah.
And then he's trying to change magazines. But there's another one where he's in the V, this guy is shooting, and he's trying to change magazines. And man, can we not? All right. So in Moore County, North Carolina. Yes. Moore County, North Carolina. I hope you're listening to this. Me and three other dudes did a 3 or 4 day training event for them pro bono. And there was like 9,100 officers, give or take, whatever. And we went through a whole bunch of stuff, evaluation, basics, and then some drills. But there was a bunch of, you could see it, right? You could see the unwillingness to change from the teacup to maybe the isosceles or modified isosceles or whatever it might've been.
Yeah.
You know, I'm talking to one of the officers and he's a big old dude. And he says to me, I've been shooting for 30 years. I go, yeah, but your shot group for you can't see me. I'm holding up a shotgun, shotgun pattern. His shot group at 25 meters was absolutely horrendous. Yeah. I said, so we stopped training completely. And I said, I just want to take a break. And we brought everybody in. And I gave a little speech and I said, look, I'm not saying these things because I'm not thumping my chest. I'm not full of crap. But here's what I'm going to tell you. I said, between us four, we have well over 100 years in the United States Army. And then between us four, we have at least 40 years of combat. And so, and by the way, I asked the training ops, a guy, I said, how many days of training do you get a year? What's the answer? One.
Yeah.
One. And that day is what day? It's qual day.
Yeah.
And once you qual, you walk off, right?
Yeah.
You don't have to continue training because there's no more training. And if you don't qual right away, well, of course, we're going to keep shooting here until you do. And then I said, we train like this every day. Every day. Unless we were hunting man or climbing a mountain or something stupid like that. We're doing this every day. And I'm not saying this because I'm thumping my chest. I'm just telling you, this works, right? Listen to us for a minute, right? Let go of your ego. This works. And, that's the problem, though. When you hear somebody say, we get one day a year, or how many days, you guys have a full-time team here in Austin, but How many my SRT guys in Moore County? I don't know how many days they get to train, man.
It's not
a
enough.
A week in a year.
It's not enough.
No, it's not. So I blame again ombudsman, councilman, the budget. Right? We've seen we already know the budgets are mostly
well. That's
horrible.
when they defund the police. The very first program that gets defunded is training.
Yeah.
Well, right. Because
I'll even say even if you're doing operations. If you're not really doing good debrief and really looking at why we were successful, why we failed, you can continue to do that operation tempo and never evaluate and just think, oh, we got lucky, or the guy that we went up against, he didn't vote the way we thought we was going to vote, so we're good. And so you can continue to train, or you continue to go on that path of high operational speed and never really evaluate why we were successful. Was it luck, or was it because we were really squared away? And that can get you in trouble too, because you're not going back and validating training and going, hey, you know what? Now that we're able to stop and look and really evaluate this, what we did was just because of luck. There's departments that do that, that they just get so far down the line that it's like, okay, let's evaluate what we're actually doing in training, because what we did in live ops, we just got lucky and then we brushed it up and we just attributed that to, oh, we got lucky and that becomes the norm. And that's a bad thing too, that I see in law enforcement. And that's why I love the community that you came from, man. They're so fucking critical of operations. They're always pushing the envelope. They're always looking at things in a critical manner. And I love having conversations with guys from your community, because it makes me reevaluate things. It makes me go, that's interesting. Not everything is always applicable to what we do.
Very true.
And I say that in some of the stuff, like we're not fucking going to go do helicopter ops. We're not going to fucking do dirt bike shit and, you know, ski in the mountains and all that fun fucking cool stuff. But when it comes to actual tactical operations, the planning, the mindset, the shit that I look at, I'm like, fuck, dude, that's another level. And I can even take that and apply it to what we are doing, or take some principles of that, man, that's a good day for us, because y'all's community is fucking brutal as far as having thick skin and being able to put ego aside for the greater mission.
Oh, there's plenty of it there. We still have plenty of it, but
yeah, you know what I mean?
You know, Tracy Sledge. He's coming on to TTPOA. He's coming on. He's a Lubbock guy.
Oh, yeah. I know you're talking about. Lubbock County.
Yeah. So when I first got out and I got a relationship with Josh, who was just recently killed. Yeah. Oh, I say recently.
He was a good friend of mine. I knew him.
Dude, I was telling some guys yesterday, that was that funeral. When I went there.
You were there? Okay, I was there too. Yep.
I was blown away by what Lubbock did for the law enforcement officers. Yeah. I was blown away. Yeah. And it was hard because he was a great dude. Yeah. But when I went out there and I said, you know, this is what we're going to do. And they're like, you know, we don't do that. We're not going to get that. I go, yeah, you will. You're going to get it.
Yeah.
And we had the greatest time. They had a great training area there. They had like a old Air Force barracks hospital type thing.
Yeah.
It was tailor made for complex and you know CQB deliberate or hostage rescue whatever.
I've been there.
It was awesome, and they were like, this is amazing, right? And they of course they completely got it. I'm like, dude, don't sell yourself short. I tell students all the time, give yourself permission. It's not as hard as people make it out to be.
Yeah,
and it's not all that complicated. You mentioned earlier, brother, the principles. If we follow these principles, these X amount, however you want to go, and then use some control measures. And then a constant thinking man's attitude with a warrior mindset. This is not a lot hard, man. Yeah. I want to give people the permission. This let me show you. Let's do it. And just do it over and over and over again.
Yeah. And I would say like the speed at, you know, the modulation of speed, I'm very big into. Like not everything is always on the gas. Not everything is on the brake. There's that clutch.
Dude, you're awesome.
There is that
modulation. We do a horrible job of, in law enforcement.
We do.
It's like 0 to 100 and we have a hard time tapping the brakes and kind of backing back down to like 50 and then going back to
shifting gears. I always say shifting gears, man.
I mean, I don't know. You know, honestly, I think it depends on the team. I think it depends on operational tempo. I think it depends on training. I mean, there's so many skill sets. I mean, there's so many things that go, you know.
I think, too, I agree with that. I think it's that defining. What definition are you using? Because the catchphrase is, for years and years, dynamic entry. What the fuck's that really mean? Is it the tactic? Is it the style? Is it the pace? What does that mean? And I think you could have 20 SWAT guys in around the country, and you just work that word out, and you could possibly have
20 different definitions
or something that's similar and all that kind of stuff. And to me, that's why I'm big on defining it. And that's why I think when you just go and use terms as modulation of speed, shifting gears to go from, hey, I got to slow it down here. I got to get really fast through that fucking entryway.
Yes.
And then maybe take a clutch mentality of, hey, I'm switching into from first to second gear.
Switching your hips at the door?
Yeah. I'm processing in my mind.
Lay your dick out on the table.
Yeah, exactly. I'm processing my mind of, oh, that's a fucking clear wall. I can speed up. Oh, yes. Shit. Now there is things that can hide bodies. There's dead space. I might have to slow down just a second to go.
Yes.
My mind's got to catch up with the speed of my body.
Now it's exactly right.
And I think that's where we lack in overall training of our guys in law enforcement, to be able to have that conversation to go, when I say this word can mean several different things, but it all means the same because it's the modulation of speed.
And it also goes back to experience, right? Yes. So kind of like what we're seeing now is SWAT teams aren't being used as much as they were in previous years, right? Even the large, like the larger teams. And are they're being told by admin or city council or state government or national government that you can no longer do a certain.
Yeah, they're under pressure. Yes, yeah,
right. So
you guys have the hardest job because for us, right, we didn't have that pressure. You know, you guys are.
So, but now let's say like we have like a team that's active, but they don't do a whole lot of, I air quote here, dynamic entry, however you do it, you know, your definition of dynamic entry. But let's say now we have that HR pop up and you have to make an emergency assault on an HR. Or deliberate assault in HR.
Do I understand Austin has done like 8 or 10 of them in the last couple of years?
They've done, they've had a lot of shit go down.
But there's a lot of teams that don't have that many, right?
Ever.
Yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
They might not have that ever.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of teams that, like I said, I bring in a lot of training through my region and talk with a lot of guys, and they only have one speed to do anything. And that is slow. And I'm like, what happens if this? How do you not modulate?
That's where I was going with that. So,
and it's like they don't, and they'll look at you. Go, we don't. I'm like,
but you may have to.
You need to figure that out because, I mean, I just look at it as okay. We do a BP on a deal, and you have your emergency react team. You just have four guys,
barricaded person.
So some guys in there, and all of a sudden we don't have the full team, but. The first four guys get there and they have a slammer and they have some tools. Go down there. You're the emergency entry team. If something happens and all of a sudden something happens, you just got four guys to go fucking do something really, really fast. You don't have four guys to go, well, hey, let's check behind this and let's check in this. No, you got to fucking go because at the end of the day, if you don't do it, who the fuck is?
That's great. And do you remember the body cam for Nashville? Well, you just saw him, right?
Yeah.
And he gets out of his truck. He meets with a woman. He loads up his rifle, and then he gets moving. Do you remember in the video where he goes by a dude who's taking a knee at the door?
Yeah.
Well, there's that.
What
one.
Was he? Well, hey. What was that guy doing?
There's the one too where they're going up the switchback staircase, and the one guy goes, "Yeah, go!" Like the guy is actually in the lead. He stops on that platform and turns around and points and goes, "Yeah, go!"
And
do you remember that one?
No, I don't.
Yes. There's the actual shooter's body cam.
Yep.
Right. He's number two going up the stairs. The first guy hits that first platform and basically turns and puts his back against the wall and starts to point and tell the other guys to go. Because, I mean, you're
here. You don't want
to
go. Well,
fucking reality said so it was like, oh, shit, this is not good.
It's the dude wearing that looks like a fucking riot helmet.
Yeah.
Is it a dude with a shotgun?
No.
Okay.
No, it was a dude that looks like he's wearing like a riot helmet. Okay. So it looks like he has like a plastic helmet with that face, with that fucking face.
But at the end of the day is, man. I did something.
Yeah.
But did you really do something?
Did you?
And that's where it comes down
to.
He did something. He got the fuck out of the way.
And I'm, like I said,
I'm not trying to bash anybody, but I also will say, hey, this is not everybody fucking there was a hero. Let's just face it. Every call that you go on to, just because your name is on the call sheet doesn't mean you fucking did the hard shit.
I tell you what's awesome.
And that is.
After that video was released, me as the range guy, you know how many texts and emails and phone calls I got. Hey, why can't we run LPVOs? Why can't we run LPVOs? You know.
The thing that wasn't the key. That solved that problem.
And I'm like, if you pay attention, he's canted at a 45 degree angle.
Does he have a red dot on there somewhere?
He has something. He has to either have backup irons or something on that 45 on the right side of the gun because he's not looking through that glass when he makes that shot.
Yeah, I don't think the LPVO is a gimmick by any means, but it's really not that necessary.
I think it has its pros.
Sure,
I think it has its cons.
I'll tell you that I had a Schmittenbender, and I had two uppers. My world was mostly 2 meters to 250.
Hmm?
That's it.
Yeah,
that's it. And I think the sniper data. The sniper data guy is here, right? He was here yesterday. I don't know his name. It was Marty and I talking about this yesterday. The sniper. So when the layman hears the word sniper, it invokes.
Yeah. Are you talking about the Bartlett? I don't know what his name is.
Sniper data Jesus guy?
Yeah. What's his name? We out of Florida.
He does the data. I don't know.
Yeah. American Sniper.
Or American Sniper Association?
I don't know.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I know you're
talking about
it. It's like 50-something yards.
But it's like, it's not Carlos Hathcock, like, bro.
It's 30, 35 yards for, now each region, so I know what you're talking about. So each region, it's broken down in regions across the country. There's like 7 or 8 regions across the country. But I think the average is like 35-yard deployment distance for law enforcement. Right, and the closest shot was fucking 3 yards.
Which is stupid. That's not a sniper shot.
3 yards.
just because he had sniper in his name. Well, Joe Sniper Smith.
And he used a fucking bolt action Remington 700 across the hallway.
That's insane.
And then I think the furthest was like 450, 500. It was like rural somewhere. Fucking deer hunter sniper rifle guy.
Yeah.
Shot a bad guy.
And the whole deal is one of those deals. And I've seen memes on Instagram. Is that, now we get to run, variable optics and stuff like that. I'm like, okay, that's great. It's like anything else, it's a fucking tool to put in the toolbox. But at the end of the day, do you have fucking the skill
to shoot
the motherfucker and accurately?
Again, so now we're looking at the lowest common denominator, right?
LCDs, lowest common. So I put an LPVO on my LCD that comes out and qualifies once a year or does a rifle class here and there. Yeah. When shit hits the fan, I see it all the time.
That's right.
Because I have a couple dudes that run them right now.
What do I do?
Well, so they got that shit so fucking powered up because we finished at the 100, right? So they're dialed up to shoot whatever at 100. They don't fucking turn it back down like we teach them, right? Because you can use that as like a red dot depending on distance and stuff. Shit hits the fan. They grab the thing out of their bag and now it's fucking dialed up to 100. And what's the first thing they fucking do?
Yep.
They start coming off of it and trying to fix it and look at it.
This could be the moment that the hostage dies or your friends die.
100%.
Yep. Yeah, your rifle is no longer his shield.
So if you get that and you train on it every fucking day and you're a fucking student of your craft and you're a badass, I'm completely cool with it.
But that ain't the case.
But that's not the case all the time.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
No, it makes total sense. It just complicates matters.
100%.
And again, we need to keep this simple.
No, you're right. You're right.
Shit goes downhill, we need to keep things simple.
I mean, I see all these fucking whiz bang shit that you put on rifles and fucking these mounts that are 12 feet high. And all, I'm like, at the end of the day, man, what am I doing to work on my skills to do this fast and accurately, as fast as I possibly can.
I have a 6 hour MCX Virtus with LPVO. I'd never shoot it.
Mm-hmm. Dude, it's a
case queen. It sits in the case.
I still require our patrol guys to have fixed iron sights.
Well, they have a red dot as well?
They can.
Yeah, so redundancy?
100%.
What's wrong with that?
100%.
I talked to the Unity guys yesterday. I like some of their products, but I don't
like the Unity mount.
I don't.
Because the offset is different?
It's too high. It doesn't do cheek to stock weld. You can't, to me.
See, for me, I'm able to actually stand up a little bit more, erect and be able to get that good cheek stock and still look right down that dot.
No,
that's just for me. That's
my build. Doesn't matter what you have. As long as you train with
it, you can fucking rock it.
I will have to change what I do that I've done for years. So I'm not going to go there. Yeah. But when I talk to, if you have a Unity mount and you have a laser beam up front, right? So you can't put iron sights on.
Nope. Well, you can.
It's just,
who makes,
I was looking at,
that canted little weird.
Oh,
No. It's the iron sight that actually fits in front of the pec. It's like it looks like the front of the pec. So the pec.
Yeah.
No, oh, no. Look, okay. No, that's fine. I mean, but is it going to be tall enough?
The iron sight? Yeah.
Is it super fucking tall?
No.
Well, you
talking about like for the Unity mount?
Yeah. Because it's going to have to come over top.
So that rear aperture is the same height as a normal fixed iron sight. Just your optic sits a little bit higher versus like lower one third or co-witness.
Okay.
Does that make sense? No?
I have to look at it. I can't see it in my head. I can't see it. Yesterday when I picked up those two rifles I had there, the two white ones, they were fake rifles and whatever, but I'm like, you can't even mount iron sights on this. So the answer is no.
I have to look at the Unity mount, but the one that I'm running is a Unity mount and I have like a aimpoint T whatever on there.
T1, T2.
Yeah, one of those. And the only thing is it changes your offset up close just because now your optic versus being that lower one third, it's sitting a little bit higher. But if you hold hairline for CQB, you're still...
You got the eye box?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's one of those things, like going back to offset, like so we do a basic SWAT every year and an advanced SWAT every year, and part of one of the training days is range day. And just over... time of seeing this, run this enough, I and the other and cadre that teach the pistol stuff, the rifle stuff, have seen an issue with men and women understanding offset. So there we do round robins, and one of the stations is, hey, once you leave this fucking station, if you don't understand offset, that's on your ass. If you don't go practice it, it's on your ass. Because I'm shocked when you say that word, they're like, what are you talking about? Like,
dude, it literally,
it's crazy.
Under duress, they will fail. A lot of guys that don't, men and women both, a lot of shooters that say that.
Yeah.
A lot of officers, agency officers, whatever, even military guys, of course. Yeah. If they don't train with it, under duress, they forget about it.
Yeah, they do every single time.
And the only way that I figured out how to do it, to teach it correctly, right? I take about 30 minutes and I have like this little, I have a back of a target that I've drawn on, and I take that to every class and kind of explain offset and zero and bullet path and sight and all that. And then when we teach it, we just tell them to hold at the hairline or hat line, just right there, because that's the easiest thing to do versus having guys like, you know, I want you to aim, you know, you got like a 2-inch drop or inch and a half or whatever it is. I want you to aim here to hit here. Just fucking hold the hairline and go.
That's interesting that you mentioned, you're mentioning headshots, because I think that a lot of agencies, because of councilmen, ombudsmen, mayors, governors, get scared about that. And I wanted to ask you one more thing too. I mean, I want to ask you a whole bunch of stuff, but so you have the headshots, which is cool.
It's a Dutch podcast now.
No, when you do the evolution, when we talk evolutionary stuff, the headshots came in about because we were shooting body stuff all the time. Mm-hmm. And then when you get to real combat, you want to end the scenario? You want to end it? Headshot.
Dude,
stop talking about anything else. Just a headshot.
Just think about like for us. I mean, you know, if for like an HR, I mean, like even like patrol dudes, there may be times like where they have their wife or their kid or they're behind cover. If they're kneeling down behind like a vehicle, like in an open air venue type thing. I mean, you know, if that's all you have, man. If that's all you have, take it.
All right. So entry, dynamic, whatever, deliberate. Dogs. Are you using animals, or are we screwing around still and not using animals in this
office? I can only speak for my department. We are not using them correctly.
Come on.
My department's a 400-man agency. 400 plus. We only have one dog right now. We're getting a second one, and they're not used.
Afterthought.
Yep, 100%.
Well, or the old officer who doesn't want to retire yet.
The program the program has just been run wrong. Right? It's not a thing. It's more of a liability than a thing.
So your boss listening to this podcast?
So we have a new boss. Hey, so we have a new boss, and that's why we're getting a new dog.
Dude, canine dog integration. We do that too. This is, to me, the biggest thing that I ever saw that helped everything. There was, you know, early in the program, one guy said, you'll never do this. 6 months later, Nobody wanted to do it without it. Nobody wanted to go without it.
Yeah. So I know some of the larger teams around us are running SWAT dogs, which is awesome. Just another tool, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's
we tried
saves
that.
Lives.
We tried that and we were told flat out no. So we're trying to have like a dedicated handler on the team to be with us only, and we're told no. Which I get it, because that takes away from the big department, right? Because if we're trying to make the department, if we're trying to make the program better, that dog needs to be in patrol. That dog needs to be available for the patrol guys.
Oh, so yeah, so I get that.
So
yeah.
I mean, I get it, right? And that's why we were told that. Good, and no, I absolutely agree. I get it. You explain it to me that way, good. Just don't go no.
It's funny because I didn't want to get into the dog deal with what my department has had to deal with, and it's been a fucking roller coaster.
Have you lost, Brandon? Have you lost an officer in the last 365?
No, we've been very fortunate.
When's the last time you lost one?
Man, we have been very fortunate. 98 when I got in the academy.
When's the last time you lost one? 98. That's actually,
yeah, it's been a while. Been very good.
2013. No.
Was it either 2007 or Harkins, right?
It was Esparza.
I want so all right.
It's been a while.
Well, that's good too, obviously. But go back and look at the vignette. Could an animal have saved him? Could sending the animal have saved his life?
What's funny now is
Terre Haute uses them all the time now, yeah. And they are good at it. You know,
I believe in the dog stuff. And what's crazy is that there's been, once again, it's the pacification of leadership around the country, because we were very, like, our canine and patrol was very top notch, and then all of a sudden things changed. Anyway, we did an operation not too long ago, very outside the scope of most city departments. It was in a rural area, wooded area, heavily densed trees and brush and shit. Technology was limited because of you can't fucking get a robot into brush and trees.
No.
And it's fucking and it's mud.
Don't get me started on the robot dog shit and they can't do what a dog can do.
Yeah. So there's just technology limitations. Drones. And my deal is, we're out there. There's a fucking dude who's already shot at cops. He's already shot at the helicopter. He's buried somewhere in this fucking wood area.
Oh yeah, that's dog time
and stuff. And my deal was hey. We had to go take it over. It wasn't our operation to begin with. We had to take it over. And my deal was, there's already dogs out there. Hey, can we get dogs? And I was told, hey, not by my chain of command, but not because it was our dogs. It was someone else, and theirs was. Well, we don't want to risk having the dog. And I'm thinking, so let's go fucking risk me. But let's not go risk the dog. I'm it's the same tool.
Well, not for him.
And not that I want to get the dog shot. But at the end of the day, that is the purpose of sending a dog in, is if there is a guy wanting to shoot us, well, he's going to have to deal with that dog as he's shooting. And then we'll fucking know exactly where he's at.
Yes, sir.
And we'll figure this out.
Well, then, shocker, you might could put a camera on a dog.
Yeah. There's a lot of shit.
Never think of that.
Our one, like our one good handler right now, and he just promoted, so he's actually off the unit. But man, we've done plenty of SWAT calls with him, and he understands. Like, hey, I'm going to send my dog in there, right? Because I'd rather him go in there and get injured than you,
dude.
Yeah.
If you look at Special Operations Canines, 26 or there's more than that. I'll tell you, I know personally, that's 26 men. Right. And there's other occasions where dogs save more than one guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And they were think about that. Look at that huge pyramid of how many people lived because of that.
And it's also a force multiplier.
Yes. Yeah, it's a positive force multiplier.
So if we, for whatever reason, we go to the front door and we, you know, breach and hold for whatever reason, dude, we'll do our call out and have that dog fucking doing its thing in the background. 100% mental mind fuck.
Yeah. No one likes to get bit.
Yeah. No one wants to get bit.
Mm-mm. 50 states, all non-lethal force. But there are, again, I did the TTPOA San Marcos, what was that, 18, 19?
Yep.
And Gary, I was working with Gary Heath on that one. Mm-hmm. But I talked canine integration a lot. I actually had a booth.
God, you suck. That happened. Because you're an idiot.
Paper down. There's a paper down.
Jesus. Shit.
There we go.
Go ahead, man. Hey, sorry.
I just wondered if it was juice pit. Was it juice pit?
No, it's probably fucking good liquor.
No. It was what was left of my hydrating drink. So, but it was good.
Hydrating drink. Okay.
Hey, there's water in it. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is, but there's water in it. Mm-hmm. But where were we? 26 people? No, we were beyond that. What were we doing?
San Marcos.
Yeah. So, yeah, a lot of guys would ask about canine integration, and I actually had a booth. It was weird. And but a lot of the guys came back and said, there's no way our councilman would agree to this. You know, they don't like the dogs attacking people. It's visceral. It's bad. Yep. It's terrifying. And it is. It can be.
Well, any use of force is bad.
Shocker.
It's perceived bad if you don't know.
Well, now you got local law, lawmakers like the one in California saying, you know, no dogs at all because it's racist.
Yeah.
You're an idiot. But
yeah. But that's California. Thank God we don't live in California.
Oh, yes. Dude, don't get me started.
So Dutch, man, we've been talking for about an hour and a half, man.
Bonus. We got more?
Man, you want to? Yeah, absolutely,
it's
man.
It's all on you, man.
Absolutely. Man, is there anything else that you want to talk about? Anything you want to get out there? Like, where can guys find you? Where can guys train with you?
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Dutch Chris Moyer Actual on the IG social media. I think we're on Facebook too, but I don't cultivate that. Somebody else does that for me. Yeah, Dutch Chris Moyer Actual on the IG. So ready, Dutch Chris Moyer Actual on the IG. And then that's DCM Consulting. It's DutchChrisMoyer.com. It's DutchChrisMoyer.com.
And you can find you on the old internet there.
And, on the webs, yeah.
And you got your schedules, everything posted?
Schedule is posted.
So where are you going after TTPOA, my man?
What day is it today? Who am I? I'm Batman, right? Well,
these trainers don't know where they're going, man.
It's funny, right? I know. So I'd have to look at my calendar, actually. Yeah. But we 22nd is currently a class at my home range, so I'm going back to North Carolina and doing that. And then it gets crazy because on the 25th or so, I'm driving to Idaho. So it's 2,400 miles from North Carolina. I'm going to Idaho, and I'm doing an aerial marksmanship thing with forward movement training in Boise area. And then I'm driving a quarter lane, right, 8 hours north, and we're doing evolutionary gunfighter on the 1st and 2nd. That is an open enrollment, not law enforcement only at all. And so this aerial marksmanship too is going to be super cool because you're obviously shooting a rifle outside of a helicopter, and that a lot of people don't get to do that in their life. And then I leave Idaho, and then I go to emergency hostage rescue CQB in Indiana for 3 days. That's 10, 11, 12. That is law enforcement only, and there are slots open for that. I'm hoping to get like 20 dudes in there, but that is the 10th, 11th, and 12th of May in Terre Haute, Indiana, and that is emergency hostage rescue CQB stuff. And then, boom, right after that, I'm driving to Michigan, the Grand Traverse, and we're doing a Michigan TOA. And then I come home for a minute or two, and then I'm out to Arkansas on I just had an IG live with Randy Sharp from the Arkansas TOA.
Yeah, we're friends.
You know Randy? Yeah, I like me some Randy.
We're friends with all those guys.
30-31-1 is another hostage rescue CQB type.
Dude, you're killing it.
Train to trainer. And then the OTOA in June.
Yeah, I'll be up there. I'll see you.
Awesome.
Yeah, cool.
Dude, you're killing it, man.
Hey, so we're running. In your time where you came from, did you get to work with Greg Gravy Coker, or was that different unit and all that kind of stuff? Because
he was 160th.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I know. Yeah. I know him.
Yeah, man. We our first year we had a podcast, and we didn't really know who he was. He had a booth out there, and then we had Noner come up for a podcast.
And
Noner sees him and was like, dude, they embraced and hugged. I'm like, okay, that dude knows, like, you just don't do that with. And then we had him on a podcast. It was really great listening to his stories and just the man that he is and just his ups and downs and stuff. And I knew y'all's time, it was kind of the same era, but yep. I know the different units and squadrons and things like that. So,
and you're good friends with Pat Mack, right?
I am good friends with Pat. Talk about Mike too. Mike has done, I tell you what, I really, really enjoy Mike, the way he trains, he's very realistic.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of stuff from concealed, of course, because he understands what's going on in the world. Yep. But then he does a lot of stuff around cars. Okay. And I am 100% on board with what Mike does on cars. Yeah. There's no, like, we laugh about this, right? The vehicle CQB talk. There's no vehicle CQB.
Yeah.
And then this, the Temple Index stuff that we try to steer people away from. But that's a thing for cars, I guess. I don't know who started that. You know, this, what's the other technique? This, the one that John Wick uses, this,
John Wick.
It's like a retraction gun. It's like not a gun retraction, but it's a, when he holds the gun close to his, you know, not all extended, it's all in close. So this is Israeli stuff, right?
Is there a name for that?
Yeah, there's a name for
the
it.
The Crescent Moon. I don't know.
How about that? The Crescent Moon.
I just came up with that. I'm marketing that shit. It could be.
But, you know, my partner Dylan, every time I ask, I have to ask him, he always tells me what this, it has an acronym to it.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah. And so, and I'm not, man, again, if you can do A to Z and be safe and kill a bad guy, then obviously I'm not so full of hubris that doesn't work.
Right.
But man, I'm not a fan of that crap at all. And it's funny. It's being, I don't know if it's an Israeli thing. The limited penetration to room is Israeli. The pie stuff is a lot of Israeli stuff. This gun retraction thing is Israeli. I'm like, the temple index, I don't know if it came from the Israelis or not. You know, the Israelis also don't have a round in the chamber.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so fun. I have a lot of friends that
I just came back from Jerusalem, bro. I was in Israel for a week. And there's a lot of armed presence there, which is great. I'm fine. I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
They don't have a round in the chamber.
Yeah.
There's a, I'm like looking at the guards at the wailing wall.
So they draw and they get in that weird, like low kind of wide squat stance. And as they're stancing, they're racking and they're coming up.
I'm seeing guards at the Western wall, right? As you're going in, that M4s or that kind of thing.
The rifles either?
Air platform with a flag in it.
Oh, geez.
With a flag in the chamber. I'm like, okay, so you have a loaded magazine maybe in the in the gun, but how are you going to do that?
So what's the reason behind that? Do you know?
I don't know. Damn. What's the reason why condition one, right? Was that called condition one? They're not going to be loaded. Why not load it?
So
why?
Especially with a flag in it, because then you got to get that damn thing out.
How's that going to work for you?
But if you're standing, on a post.
Standing on a post.
Is different to me.
It
needs to be fucking loaded.
Yeah, but if the emergency happens right outside the post, you got to charge your weapon. How are you going to do that?
I got to take this flag out.
I don't want, I mean.
You hold it upside down while you charge it.
I kind of get the pistol thing, but I don't.
I don't get it.
I mean, because like they're carrying concealed, maybe. I don't know.
So?
I don't know.
Do you carry concealed with a round in the chamber?
Fuck yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. I'm not, I'm dumb. I'm fucking Texan, bro.
Right? I'll go one further. I have, I use the clip draw. I love the clip draw. I don't know if you guys know what that is. Uh-huh. So I have a clip draw on my Staccato. I have a clip draw on my 320. I carry a 320, 4-inch 320, fully loaded, clip draw, no cover on my trigger and round of the chamber. People are like, "Oh, you're a man. I would not do that." I'm like, "What, dude? 5 to 7 pounds has to get into the trigger and has to pull backwards. 5 to 7 pounds. 5 to 7 pounds. It doesn't do that. The finger makes the gun go bang."
Yeah.
Well,
I like that. That
I don't know.
The title.
I've been in a class and seen a bungee cord from a fucking rain jacket make the gun go bang.
Well, that was one of my classes. That's a finger. This is a thing that has to go in there.
No, absolutely.
Yeah. It's rare.
Absolutely.
Super rare.
But it is funny. I know a lot of guys from the Army side, and man, that whole Israeli tactics is fucking like they're like that shit is stupid.
So one of your teammates said this quote, and I'm not going to say who said it, but it was like, second-rate army in a third, beating up on third-world countries.
Yeah. Well, that's hard, right?
I know.
Oh, by the way, to your point, though, everyone has a name, by the way. So you can say, I'm not going to say his name, but everyone has a name.
Yeah.
So that's gay.
I actually think he said on the podcast. So.
No, this was years ago. I would never forget this.
That's hard.
Yeah.
I don't, and again, you know. I just don't get it. But and again, if you can make it happen, go from A to B.
I got it.
Yeah.
All right. So, hey, we ask all of our guests this. Okay. Our motto is train hard. What does that mean to you?
Training hard is, first of all, it's necessary. It's completely the right thing to do. Training hard means that you're under duress, you're under the timers, you're changing magazines on the move, you're it's something physical. It's, again, physical, tough, realistic training under duress. How about that? Is that the easiest way to say it?
That's great.
I mean, training hard has to be, you have to do it, right? Because it was Erwin Rommel, pretty sure. He was the guy who coined it, is that sweat saves blood in combat. You could probably take that same quote all the way back to like the Roman soldiers or something. But sweating and training saves blood in combat, period. Yeah, I used to have a guy who... Again, everybody has a name, but here I'm not going to say his name.
Oh, it's gay.
Stupid name. His name, oh, I tell you what, his name's Bob. I was his subordinate at a time, and he ran the whole, like my guys, right? He ran the whole thing. And we would go do some hard training somewhere else. For instance, we're in Kentucky doing some hard training. And then we would fly back, and he would create a horrible event for us to do when we returned, unknown to us. And it, almost after every training mission we did, we had to do one more. And without a doubt, that sucks. But going back even to the tribe thing, oh my gosh, you couldn't silence your phone?
It's my protein shake time.
All right, cool. It's my hydration time.
That means he's going to do some stuff.
Anyways, go back to the mindset of the tribe, right? Crucible, a great crucible is a great way for a leadership to bring the men together through suffering, right? This is, you're anointed, right? Can you win through suffering?
Yeah.
That's we did it all the time. Now, I have to tell you that I asked him one time, so make it good for the men. So once we do this, you know, week long of training and then do this horrible mission in the heat where, you know, everybody's going to suck it and hate it. Yeah. But just, you know, take the precious cargo that you retrieved from the thing and bring it up to the picnic area, and it's full of food and full of beer, and then, you know, have a good time.
Right.
That's what you do. And he's like, what, for doing their job? I'm like, yes, yes, yes. I love you, bro, for training me hard, but then show me some love on the other end, you know, because everybody would love that. So, but that's, I mean, that's hard training. Hard training, even after, you know, you're some other hard training, do some more.
Well, I've heard stories and, like Sandy Wall was talking about one of them, of where you came from, of doing training and shit happens, helicopter crashes, whatever, and whoever survived that helicopter crash that wasn't hurt, they kept on with the mission because that's what happened.
It was a training exercise.
If it really happened, hey man, we'll come back and save you, but this is the mission that we're in training, because if it happened on a real mission, this is what we're having
to do. It's super rare. Where I came from is super rare to shut down training because of some mishap.
This was a SWAT cop from Houston telling us a story where, you know,
it was back in
special mission unit was down in Houston doing some training. And they had the whole thing, and the cops had the streets blocked off and everything. Little bird comes in, fucking crashes.
Yeah.
Right? Hard landing, kind of tips over a little bit. And he goes, all these guys hop off the fucking skids and kind of uncrawl from under their fucking aircraft, and they run toward the target. And of course, they're thinking, oh shit, fucking train's going to be shut down, all this stuff. And he's like,
helicopter, and there's two guys pinned in there. So they start trying to lift the guys out, and they get the guys out. And then he's like, wait a minute, I'm fucking hearing gunfire. Like, they still kept doing the operation. And so they finished that. And then the guys that were assigned to that helicopter come back, and then they start helping. And he's like, where'd y'all go? He's like, our mission was that. Our mission's not here. It was there, because in real life, that's where we go. I'm like, that's fucking hardcore. That's training hard right there.
Well, they probably asked them and said, are you guys good? Yeah, we're good.
Okay. See you later. We'll be back. Well, Dutch, man, hey, I really do appreciate you taking time out of your day.
Yeah.
Again, apologize to Rita. Shout out to Rita. I'm sorry for all the non-response emails. I'm sure she hates me.
She's used to it from me, so.
He was too busy getting protein put in him.
That's weird, dude. All right, boys. Stay safe. Train hard.
Train hard.
God bless you all, man. Cheers.